Are you excited? Is this the time of year that how do you describe it? Butterflies. Does it get any better than this for you?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. Unfortunately, I don't get to work on it because we don't have the rights. So I just turn into a fan like everybody else. And it coincides with me really gearing up for baseball. So I try to watch as much as I can. But I love it, obviously. I mean, I'm heavily invested in the sport all through the regular season and championship week, the conference tournaments and so forth. And, you know, we say this every year, but this year, even more than I can ever remember, the parity or how wide open it is or however you want to describe it, it's going to be mayhem in this tournament.
This year is interesting because, I mean, it's been 10 years since someone went back-to-back. Villanova has a really good chance to do it. And you look at this bracket, the only thing or the biggest thing, I suppose, that might stand in their way, they get Duke in their bracket or in their region as a number two. And a lot of people thought they could be a one seed. Is that their biggest stumbling block early?
I think so until if they were to get to the Final Four, obviously. I mean, Wisconsin is the Wisconsin-Virginia Tech game is really interesting, and I have no idea who's going to win it. But if Wisconsin wins, that's a veteran team with guys who have, with two starters, two really good players who have both played in two Final Fours in their careers as member of the Badgers. And I think Villanova is really, really good. I don't think they're the best team in the country, and I don't think they're quite as good as they were last year when they won the national championship. And if Wisconsin were to knock them off in the second round, I wouldn't be stunned. There's very little about this tournament, I think, that can stun me, I guess, just from having worked in college basketball for so many years. You know, it's one game on a neutral court. It's not best four out of seven when the better team has home ice or home field or home court. It's one game on a neutral court. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, yeah, Duke is formidable right now. I mean, they were the consensus number one team coming into the start of the regular season. And I know a lot of listeners here just start following the tournament like this or the sport like today. They had a lot of injuries, like a lot of injuries in the beginning of the year. But they're getting better and better. Jason Tatum, a freshman of theirs, might be the best player in the country right now and is going to be a top three or four pick, I think, in the draft. Grayson Allen is playing much, much better. Luke Kennard is a sensational player. And I think if Duke and Villanova were to meet in the regional final, I would give Duke a slight edge in that game.
You are right. A lot of people start paying attention today. There's only so many hours in the day for sports fans, I suppose. I'm trying to think even over this winter, my college basketball consumption. I mean, who couldn't watch Grayson Allen once in a while? I tuned in to watch a little bit of Dylan Brooks, right? To give myself an idea. Pardon me?
Your Canadian content.
Yeah, no, exactly. My CanCon. Yeah. It's interesting, though, because I mentioned Florida 10 years ago, and then you had Duke 25 years ago. And before that, it was the John Wooden UCLA teams and that have gone back to back and they won whatever it was, six in a row. When you look at the way the game has changed and one and dones and everything, winning back to back NCAA men's Division I titles, is this the toughest repeat in sports right now?
Absolutely. I think so. Yeah, because generally the top teams, the top programs have players who are going to leave after 1 year, Kentucky, Duke, UCLA, not always, but some of their key players tend to be the guys who come for 1 year and then go on to the NBA. So they're rebuilding or reloading, I guess is more accurate, each and every year. So, yeah, I think it is the toughest thing to repeat at. And again, when you take, instead of a four out of seven, a one-game playoff, you're asking for upsets. It's just, you know, imagine how many NHL series over our lifetimes would be different if whoever won game one won the series. That's mm-hmm. what it is in college yeah. basketball. So a lot of it just comes down to math and probability, to be honest with you. It's neutral court in one game. So, but yeah, it is the toughest to repeat. You've got to win six games over six different opponents, and usually the first couple are relatively easy for contending teams, but a lot of ones lose to eights in the second round. A lot of twos lose to sevens in the second round. And you know, if you were to ask me who's your favorite, I don't know who it would be. I think there are eight or nine teams who could win it. I don't think there are 20 teams who could win it. I think there are eight or nine teams who could win it. But I might stack them up one through eight, and then 10 minutes later, I might flip them and reverse them and think it's exactly the opposite. That's the way it's been all season long. And, you know, you've got North Carolina. They're a one seed. They've lost seven games this year. That just doesn't happen. You mm-hmm. know, the sport has changed. The one-and-done aspect of it has brought the superpowers back to everybody else to a certain extent.
Dan Shulman joins us on the Andrew Walker Show. I was going to ask you, what is the depth of field in terms of that conversation of who can win six games in a row. And I was reading, you know, a number of different articles and at most, 12, right? And you have even less, 8 or 9, you said.
Yeah, I think so. And there, you know, I mean, this tournament makes fools of us all. And, you know, we've all seen the Butlers and the George Masons and so forth get to the Final Four. I think there's a difference between getting to the Final Four and winning the national championship. You know, you got to win four to get to the Final Four. Once you're there, you're going to have to be two sensational teams in all likelihood to win it. And Butler came the closest to really toppling the entire system when they made the national championship game 2 years in a row and were one shot away from winning it one time against Duke. But I think all the number ones have a legitimate chance to win. I think all the number twos have a chance, although I'm not as high on Kentucky. I would rank them behind the other number twos. And if you look at the three seeds, I think UCLA is the best offensive team in the country. They are exciting beyond belief. Their defense is just so-so.
Yeah.
They win games 97-92 and 101-93 and things like that. And that's awesome. And it's exciting. But I don't know if you can, when you're getting scouted by a top team who's got several days to prepare in March or April, I don't know if that can. But I think UCLA, if they got on a roll and are healthy, I think they could win the national championship. Oregon is a team. They've got another Canadian, Chris Boucher, who unfortunately tore his ACL just a few days ago and is obviously out for the year. With Boucher, I would say absolutely they're in the mix. Without Boucher, I would say maybe they can get there, but I don't look at them quite the same without Boucher. The other two number three seeds, Florida State and Baylor, I'm not very high on, and I don't see anybody lower than that having a chance to win the national championship. Pull off an upset or two, get to the Final Four, maybe, but not win a national championship.
Would it be, in your opinion, just bad radio if I was just to go down my bracket and just get your pick on each and every one of these 183 games?
I mean, again, I'm no good at this, and believe me, I have people coming out of the woodwork this time of year saying, "You see all the games, tell me who's going to win."
Yeah.
If it was that simple, I'd be in Vegas by now. But we can have some fun with it, sure.
Is this one of the years where, we all kind of, we love to see upsets, but you kind of say, hey, don't overthink this. Like, there's a real good chance you get 1-1, 1-1 in that Final Four, or do you see it a little differently?
I haven't done a bracket yet, to be honest with you, but I reserve the right to change my mind. If I were going to do one, I think I would have, and I don't think we can go through all 63 games
here.
No,
I'm joking.
But I think I would have Duke over Villanova in the East Final. I think I would have Arizona over Gonzaga in the West Final. So that's a 2-1 and a 2-1. I think the first two rounds, maybe even three rounds, will be littered with upsets. But then I think it's going to really settle down. I think the top 10 teams are significantly mm-hmm. better than the others. So in the Midwest Regional, I guess it is. Something about Kansas worries me. I'm not sure what it is. I think I'm going to pick them, but I don't feel real good about them coming out. And in the South, I've seen a ton of North Carolina all year, and I just saw them for several days at the ACC tournament. I think they're great. I think they're better than Kentucky, but I think UCLA could be Kentucky and North Carolina. That's a loaded bracket. I mean, you look at the top, North Carolina, Kentucky, and UCLA in name value and in talent. That's a loaded region.
Speaking of name value, what about Notre Dame? I mean, they were a story last year. They're going to have a big following, and everything you read, they just have these weird, or they present these weird matchup problems for everybody.
Yeah, and again, just spent 4 days watching them in the ACC tournament, so their best player is a guy named Bonzi Colson, who is 6'5", but he is their center. He has a 7'2 wingspan. He led the ACC in rebounding. At 6'5", nobody's done that in over 50 years. He can shoot threes. He's got post moves. He's a good free throw shooter. He's not a good player. He's a great, great player. And their coach, Mike Bray, went to a smaller lineup about a month ago. Instead of starting a big guy named Martinez Gebben, he had Colson at the four. He moved Colson to the five, brought another guard into the lineup, and they play four out, one in, and sometimes five out, nobody in. Now, they've got a tough region. Princeton's good. Princeton's a good team. And if West Virginia gets by Bucknell, West Virginia presses all the time, and they can really wreak havoc. But I think Notre Dame gets out of that pod in Buffalo. The interesting thing, if they were to play Gonzaga, one of Gonzaga's better players is a guy named Szemek Karnowski, who's from Poland, and he is, as the saying goes, a mountain masquerading as a man. He's enormous. But can you play him against Notre Dame if he's having to chase Bonzi Colson out on the out to the three-point line? He's never done that before. Now, at the other end, you could say, well, he's huge. He could overpower Bonzi Colson. You know, which coach blinks first and changes his lineup? Notre Dame's really good. They've got veteran guys who have played in the Elite Eight each of the last 2 years. And more than any team in the country, I think, you happen to pick a team, Andrew, that I know intimately. So more than any team in the country, they never change. They know who they are. They don't get panicked. They don't get rattled. They just keep playing their game. I really like the Irish.
Dan Shulman joins us at Sportsnet and ESPN. So what about, you're right, the Boucher thing hurts. What about Dylan Brooks? And we have this debate about draft stock and how much you can help it or hurt it with a couple of games in this tournament. What are we watching from Dylan Brooks?
At this point, I think he's a known commodity, so I don't think his draft stock changes much at all. And I rarely look at mock drafts, but I think he's kind of a late first-round guy. If I'm not mistaken, you might know more than me. So he's a really good player, a great player, in fact, and the guy who wants to take the big shot at the end of the game. I mean, he's got that really, that killer instinct in him. And they're still a very good team. I mean, they gave Arizona everything that they could handle in the Pac-12 championship game, even without Chris Boucher. I don't think they'll have much trouble with Iona, although that's an experienced team that's been to the postseason before. I think whoever they would play in the second round, Creighton or Rhode Island, that's a tough game. I think Rhode Island is good. They're a good defensive team, and they had to work awfully hard to get here. I think they're battle-tested. And then if they were to get by that, Louisville is waiting as the 2 seed, and arguably the hottest team in the country, Michigan, is sitting there as a 7 seed. One of those could come out. You know, Michigan had, and I don't know if it came up on your show at all over the last few days, a borderline, a plane accident or skidded off the runway. It's not being referred to as a plane crash, but they tried to take off to go to the Big Ten tournament in Washington. High winds, they aborted the takeoff, but they were already a little bit up in the air, I believe, skidded off the runway, some cuts and bruises. Thank goodness, nothing serious. Then they go to Washington. They have to play in their practice uniform the first day because they're being held as evidence on the plane. And they win 4 games in 4 days and win the Big Ten tournament and move up to a 7 seed. They're really dangerous. They're playing with a ton of confidence and they've got a real band of brothers thing going right now. So I think Oregon's really good. I also happen to think they're in a really tough region.
I generally root what I want to cheer for. So it's a lot of Florida Gulf Coast
everybody loves them. Yeah,
they had more dunks this year than they did in 2013, believe it or not. Anyway, Dan Shulman joins. I got one Jays question. We were thinking about, this team and how it sets up. And I don't want to make this into something it's not or get ahead of myself, but I was thinking about the strength of this team, and that is the rotation. And Liriano has looked so good in the spring. And what Marcus Stroman did the other day, World Baseball Classic. Boy, you wonder if this is his breakout year, where maybe last year was not. Does it have the potential to be the best rotation in franchise history? And it's almost anticipatory in the sense of, we're used to these names. 92 is Morris, Stottlemyre, Guzman, and Steve, and Wells and Jimmy Key. They split that fifth spot. 93 was Guzman, Stewart, Morris, who was not very good that year, Pat Henken and Todd Stottlemyre. Those are all big names. We remember them. It's easy to say, well, those teams were better. But not everybody had great years, right? There were some guys with 5 and 6 ERAs. This has the chance to be a really special rotation, does it not?
It has a chance to be a great one. My memory is that the pitching was better in 92 than it was in 93. The offense was better in 93. The 92 rotation was really good.
Yeah, you had Morris, you had Guzman, and Jimmy Key had really good seasons in 92.
And
then David Cohn was later.
If you go back to 83, 84, 85, I mean, Steve and Clancy and Leal and Jim Gott was in there. And Doyle Alexander finished out that 1 year. I mean, those were good rotations, too. But there's no question, it's littered with ifs. But let's start with if everybody's healthy. If everybody's healthy, they've got a chance to be really good. And if they're healthy, I mean, Aaron Sanchez led the league in ERA last year, and I think everybody thinks that he's got another level in him. That's how talented he is. I thought Stroman pitched better than his numbers looked last year, and I think Stroman will have better numbers this year. A full year of Liriano, in my mind, has a pretty good chance of being better than a full year of R.A. Dickey. And then you're hoping Happ and Estrada can repeat what they've done. You know, Hap won 20 games, and Estrada was really good last year and even better the year before. So, yeah, it's got a chance. It's not only a rotation where the number one guy is a stud, but the number five guy's got a chance to be better than anybody else's number five, whoever the number five guy is. And the four guy's got a chance to be better than anybody else's number four. And I think for the Jays to be a postseason team again, they need a really healthy rotation, and they need to win games consistently, one through five, in that rotation.
Who do the Shulman kids root for in this NCAA bracket?
I've got three boys. One is not a sports fan at all. The oldest is a Duke fan, and the youngest is a Michigan fan. So they've actually both picked hot teams, and this is who they've liked for a while now. So one of them just watched Duke win the ACC tournament, and one of them just saw Michigan win the Big Ten tournament. So they're both feeling pretty good about how things are going right now.
Before we let you go, is in terms of polarization, is there anybody that compares to Grayson Allen in this tournament for your money?
No,
absolutely not.
Close. And you know who? No, I mean, nobody's even close. And for those who don't know, he plays for Duke, which gets more attention than anybody. He's had, in the last 2 years, three tripping incidents, a suspension, gets booed all over the country, and that sort of thing. In his own way, though, I will tell you, Dylan Brooks is polarizing. Dylan Brooks will wolf on the court. He's got a scowl on his face. I'm a big fan. He's a great player. In his own way, he's polarizing. If he played for Duke, he'd be more polarizing. But Grayson Allen is far and away the most polarizing player in college basketball.
As a sports talk host, I want Grayson Allen in a Raptors uniform next year. But that is just the sports talk in me. Dan, thanks for this. Enjoy the week.
You got it.